The views and opinions expressed on this show are purely the views and opinions of the person who made them, and do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the show's commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. As the restriction on our God-given right to free speech manifests itself throughout the world, we are inspired by Jesus Christ's immortal words, "And ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." And we reserve the rights to all our words. Thank you, and now enjoy the show.
To learn who rules over you, simply find out who you are not allowed to criticise. You are listening to ACH. I'm Andy, your host. Today is Tuesday, so it is time for the regular visit of our good friend Dr. Peter Hammond. It is 9:59 a.m. here in London, making it 10:59 a.m. over in Cape Town, South Africa. So let's bring him up right now. Peter, are you with us?
I'm with you, yes. Thank you very much, Andrew.
Thank you so much, Peter. And we were in discussion yesterday, Peter and I, emailing back and forth, because there are a lot of anniversaries of events in April, okay? And one of them is the Cat in Forest Massacre. This is one that we decided to go with. So the title of today's show is The Real Story of the Cat in Forest Massacre and Why It Was Covered Up by the by establishment historians and governments. So, Peter, where would you like to start us off with this anniversarial subject today?
Well, Andrew, one thing that strikes me is this is such an important story, because the Cat in Forest Massacre, it just shows how governments are deceptive, governments are deadly, how, in fact, when it comes to mass murder, nobody has killed more people than governments. And so when you talk about dangers of, for example, firearms, well, actually, crime isn't your biggest threat, not even war. Death by your own government is the greatest threat, as Cat in Forest Massacre proves. And also, governments lie systematically. And we're not just talking here about a Soviet atrocity. We're talking about one in which the British and the American governments were accessories before, during, and after the fact, and especially in the cover-ups. And this particular one was covered up for over 70 years before the truth really came out. But the 13th of April is the 85th anniversary of the Cat in Forest Massacre in Poland. And it affects us to this day. It's an extraordinary mystery, conspiracy, and disinformation campaign, which was finally exposed, implicating some extremely famous prominent heads of state in the atrocities and in the subsequent follow-up cover-up scandals. And a complex edifice of deception has been thoroughly dismantled by very patient and persistent perseverance and by pressure. I was on a mission behind the Iron Curtain in the 1980s in Poland, and I saw a monument to the victims of the Cat in Forest Massacre, and it just said simply, "Cat in 1940, a big cross. And this is in Poland. So I questioned, didn't they mean 1941? And the response in the polls to me immediately was, surely you don't believe the communist propaganda. And I didn't know what they were talking about. I mean, my school textbooks had said Cat in happened in 1941, and the Germans had murdered the Polish officers and NCOs. The prisoners of war were all murdered in Cat in. And I'd assumed, well, it's a German atrocity and that it happened in 1941. Well, the Poles were horrified. So, I mean, the first thing they did was they were very agitated at my ignorance on this matter. And so they pulled out a big map and they said, "Find Cat in on the map." Well, I start to look in Poland and they said, "No, further east, much further east. No, way beyond the borders of Poland." And I kept looking east and said, "Further east, further east. Look towards Moscow, there, near Smolensk." okay, there's Katin. And I said, have you ever seen a map of where the Katin forest is in your history books? No, haven't actually. Interesting point. Well, the moment you look at the map and you see where Katin is, it's obvious this couldn't have been done by Germany. They just weren't there. They weren't in Smolensk at the time that the massacre took place. And in fact, all the forensics was the massacres took place in 1940, not 41. Plainly, I had been sold a lie. And they explained, the Poles explained, although Great Britain and France declared war on Germany on the 3rd of September, 1939, ostensibly because Germany had invaded Poland. Well, and of course, because Poland had a lot of Germans in it, millions of Germans, actually, which had been given to them by the Versailles Treaty. In fact, Poland was a very polyglot nation. It had a lot of different people, even from Lithuania, Hungary, Ukraine. Poland was not a homogeneous country. It had been created by Versailles, and they didn't seem to care about demographics. They just drew the map in a way that Poland had access to the sea, even though they put millions of Germans under them, you know, the so-called Danzig Corridor and so on. And this is, of course, the major cause of what developed into the Second World War. But even though Britain and France declared war on Germany in 1939 because Germany had invaded Poland, but Russia also invaded Poland in 1939. And of course, most history books omit that fact, they pointed out. Well, the Katyn Forest was deep in Soviet territory. And over 22,000 Polish prisoners of war, including 8,000 officers, and it included chaplains, it included admirals, it included professors of university, policemen. It was the entire intelligentsia and leadership of Poland. They were murdered in cold blood by the Soviet NKVD in the spring of 1940. And when this crime was discovered, Stalin's Soviet Russia was an ally of Great Britain and of the United States of America. Therefore, the Allies found it more convenient to attribute this Soviet atrocity to their German enemies. And of course, you can't defend your enemy in a time of war because that's treason and you could find yourself in serious trouble, if not in prison. And in some cases, you could find yourself dead, like the head of the Polish government in exile, General Sikorsky, who was murdered in 1943 on the 4th of July in Gibraltar, with his daughter and with his entire government in exile of Poland, because they were questioning who is responsible for the Katyn Forest massacre. We need to look into the matter. We need an international neutral investigation. Well, that international neutral investigation had already taken place, actually, and that's what he is acting on. And then he found himself wiped out. And to this day, here we are in 2025, the communications of the Prime Minister of Great Britain, Winston Churchill, and of the President of the United States, Franklin Delano Roosevelt, their communications in June, July 1943 are still sealed, not accessible to researchers, historians, and journalists, and so on. What are they hiding? Well, the Poles are very outspoken. They say the British, on the insistence of the Americans, assassinated their General Sikorsky, the leader of the government in exile in Gibraltar 1943. And that's a whole other story. And that's, in fact, quite an intriguing story, too. But the Polish Christians told me that the British, the Americans, and the French chose to participate in a judicial fraud at the Nuremberg trials by indicting the German army, the Wehrmacht, with what was plainly a communist atrocity committed by Soviet Russia, by the Soviet Union, USSR. So the story is this. In December 1941, the head of the London-based Polish government in exile, General Władysław Sikorski, inquired of the Soviet dictator Joseph Stalin, what has happened to the Polish prisoners of war captured by the Soviets during the invasion of Poland, September 1939? Stalin assured Sikorski all Polish prisoners of war had been released. Well, in a mass grave, actually. But he said some of them might have moved to Manchuria, which is about as far away from Europe as you could get. Why would they have done that? Well, in April 1943, a German intelligence officer, Rudolf von Gersdorf, serving with the Abwehr, or military intelligence, received reports about mass graves of Polish military officers near Katyn, not far from Smolensk. A ditch 29 meters long and 16 meters wide was found, which contained the bodies of over 3,000 Polish officers piled up in 12 layers, literally layer upon layer. And this was the first of many such mass graves to be unearthed. and the German soldiers unearthed numerous mass graves of thousands of Polish officers who had been massacred in the Katyn Forest near Smolensk. And the German news reports, which first alerted the world to this on the 13th of April, 1943, and that's why every year on the 13th of April, the Polish people have a solemn day of remembrance. And my friends in Poland are still grieving about it. I mean, they lost fathers, grandfathers, brothers, husbands. They lost the cream of the leadership of the country, the entire officers and non-commissioned officers corps, the entire chaplain's corps. I mean, all of them wiped out near Smolensk. And so the Germans published this evidence, and you couldn't mistake the evidence. They brought in an international committee of the Red Cross. They brought in Swedish, Swiss, Norwegian, neutral, Spain, and so on. Specialists, you're talking about specialists in human bodies and autopsies and so on, medical people. They even brought in American and British soldiers and high-ranking officers who were prisoners of war, and brought them in to be part of the investigation. And, you know, the evidence was just overwhelming. You have the Polish uniforms, you have the Polish epaulets, the Polish buttons, money, coins, in some cases Bibles, Catholic beads with the crucifixes and so on, and all kinds of, you know, private letters written in Polish from friends and loved ones, letters in their pockets. And so there was things that could be unearthed, and there's no doubt the bullets, Makarov 9mm Soviet bullets found in the skulls. And so the forensics was quite plain. There's no doubt whatsoever that the Soviets were the ones who killed these Polish officers. And when the German government announced the discovery of the mass graves, the London-based Polish government in exile requested an investigation into this. And so Stalin immediately severed diplomatic relations with the Polish government in exile and claimed all his victims had been murdered by the Nazis. Well, that's a contradiction. If they'd been murdered by the Nazis, why would Stalin not want an investigation from the Polish government in exile? Why would you sever diplomatic relations because they're wanting an investigation, something that you claim was done by your enemies? Wouldn't you want your enemies to be exposed for an atrocity? And this reminds me of what happened during the Rhodesian War. I was brought up in Rhodesia, and at one point there was a terrible massacre of missionaries, 13 missionaries and their children of the English Pentecostal group, which was the Elim mission station in Rhodesia, in the Eastern Highlands, in Manicaland. And I've been to this site, the Elim mission station, and terrorists came in the middle of the night and bundled up these people. Now, these are all pacifist Pentecostal British missionaries who didn't believe in getting involved in the war to such an extent they wouldn't even allow a single Rhodesian soldier or even guard force to be stationed as security on their farm, the mission station, which was 4 kilometers from the border of communist Mozambique. And when terrorists came past, the Elam missionaries, these British citizens, these pacifists, actually gave them food, gave them medicines, which is illegal, of course, but the Rhodesians didn't prosecute missionaries who did things like that. They understood, you know, as a Christian, you might do good things even to your enemies. But, of course, it's not the sort of thing that would normally be tolerated in a time of war. I think if any British citizen in the Second World War had shown the kind of support for German people, whether you're talking about on the Channel Islands or wherever, they would have been tried for treason. They could have ended up in prison and been executed even, because I don't think Britain tolerated aid and comfort to the enemy during their times of war. But in Rhodesia, they turned a blind eye, but now these missionaries were dragged out and murdered. There wasn't a weapon on the mission station. They were all pacifists, and they were tortured to death. The women were raped in front of the men. The babies were butchered in front of the parents before the parents were killed. It was a hideous atrocity. Well, the communists claimed that this was done by the Rhodesians to put them in a bad light. But when the communists gained control of the country, they forbade any remembrance on the anniversary of the massacre and wouldn't allow even a memorial plaque to be set up at the school where the massacre took place. Well, that's admission of guilt. When you won't let people commemorate an atrocity that you attribute to enemies, then everyone's got to know you're lying. And so, plainly, just as the Zimbabwe government of Mugabe would not allow any remembrance for the people who they murdered and who they blissfully said, well, the Germans are responsible. Well, then why would they forbid any remembrance? And in fact, in Rhodesia, every single year there was a cracking down on attempts to commemorate the massacre of the Elam missionaries. And so it was also in Eastern Europe. Now, the German government brought in a European commission, 12 forensic experts and their staff from Belgium, Bulgaria, Denmark, Finland, France, Italy, Croatia, the Netherlands, Romania, Sweden, Slovakia, Hungary. Even Polish, American, and British prisoners of war were included in the forensic investigation. And the reports of these neutral investigators confirmed the victims were Polish officers and NCOs and intellectuals, and they were victims of Soviet forces in the summer of 1940. And when the Polish government in exile insisted on bringing this matter before the International Red Cross, General Sikorski died in an aircraft crash July 4th, 1943, which was described at the time as very convenient for the Allied leaders. And numerous books and even films have been made of the assassination of General Sikorski, which the Polish people believe without question. Well, the Soviets hastened to orchestrate an alternative Soviet version of the now disclosed massacre, claiming that these Polish prisoners of war had been massacred not by the Soviets, but by the Nazis. And Nikolai Berdenko, the president of the Soviet Academy of Medicine, was wheeled out to preside over a commission appointed by Stalin to investigate this incident. And this is called the Berdenko Commission. And they claim to have interviewed 100 eyewitnesses who swore that the Nazis had massacred the Polish prisoners of war in the autumn of 1941, which was forensically not possible. The bodies had decomposed so much, that was not possible at all. But at the Nuremberg Tribunal of 1945 to 1946, the German military were proclaimed guilty of shooting the Polish prisoners of war in the Katyn Forest. And so the Soviet version of the Katyn massacre moved from wartime propaganda into school history books, which is where I read it. The Germans shot the Polish prisoners of war in the Katyn Forest in 1941. That's what I read in the textbooks, and of course that was a lie. And the Polish-Soviet crisis threatened the Western-Soviet relations, and the British Prime Minister Winston Churchill and the US President Franklin Roosevelt were torn between their commitment to the Polish ally, who ostensibly was the reason for the British involvement in the war in the first place, and their alliance now with Joseph Stalin. So in private, Winston Churchill admitted the atrocity was most likely carried out by the Soviets. According to Edward Razkevi, Churchill admitted 15th of April 1943 during a conversation with General Sikorski, "Alas, the German revelations are probably true. The Bolsheviks can be very cruel." However, on the 24th of April 1943, Churchill assured the Soviets, "We shall certainly vigorously oppose any investigation by the International Red Cross or any other body." And classified UK documents conclude the Soviet guilt was a near certainty, but the alliance with the Soviets was deemed to be more important than the moral issue. And so the official version parroted the Soviet propaganda, and the censors suppressed all contradictory accounts. You know, you just think what's going on now in the Ukraine war and all the atrocity testimonies we're hearing done by the Ukrainians, but the Ukrainians are allies, and so this just gets suppressed, and I'm sure it's the same sort of thing. You know, governments really lie, and governments cover up the allies no matter how corrupt they are. And the British Foreign Secretary pointed out several inconsistencies in a Soviet report and the near impossibility of the Soviet version. And Winston Churchill's post-war account of Katyn skirts over the Katyn Forest Massacre in his famous History of the Second World War. He just refers to the 1944 Soviet inquiry, which attributed guilt to the Germans and added cryptically, "Belief seems to be an act of faith." So that's all the attention the Katyn Forest Massacre gets in the history of the Second World War by Winston Churchill, who obviously was a belligerent, and he was covering up some of his own cover-ups and lies involved in this. Well, the American Naval Lieutenant Commander George Early produced a report concluding the massacres were certainly committed by the Soviet Union, and President Franklin Delano Roosevelt ordered Early's report to be suppressed. And when Early formally requested permission to publish his findings, the president issued a written order forbidding it. And then this Lieutenant Commander Early was reassigned and spent the rest of the war on the very remote island of American Samoa, sort of sidelined him totally. Two senior American prisoners of war, Lieutenant Colonel Donald Stewart and Colonel John van Vliet were captured by the Germans and taken to Catan for investigation. They submitted their own independent report after their release in 1945, so at the end of the war. They could no longer be intimidated by their German captors. They weren't in prison. They were now free. And their report was the Soviets were definitely responsible for the massacre. The investigations were definitive, conclusive. So General George C. Marshall's Assistant Chief of Staff for Intelligence, Major General Clayton Bizzell, destroyed the report. Destroyed the report. Didn't just seal it. Can you imagine destroying a report like that? And during the 1951 to 1952 congressional investigations, General Bizzell defended his action before Congress, saying it was not in the United States' interest to antagonize the Soviet Union, which was America's ally at that time. And the Americans and British were embarrassed by the Soviet inclusion of the Catan Forest Massacre in the indictments against the Germans at the Nuremberg Tribunal. And the Soviet General Roman Rodenko at the Nuremberg Tribunal said, one of the most important criminal acts for which the major war criminals are responsible was the mass execution of Polish prisoners of war shot in the Catan Forest near Smolensk by the German fascist invaders. I mean, he actually had the audacity to say that at the Nuremberg trial. I mean, everyone must have been just cringing and winching in their seats at Nuremberg to hear this. Catan was the worst massacre of prisoners of war in history, stated the Soviet general who was on the panel there at the Nuremberg Tribunal. The worst massacre of prisoners of war in history, which it was. But to hear the Soviets say that when they knew they were the ones responsible, that just shows hypocrisy of very high order. For sheer-based, bare-faced hypocrisy, this accusation is classic. You accuse your enemies of what you yourself are responsible of. Everyone present at Nuremberg, including the one making the accusation, knew this was judicial fraud and this was a farce. Not that that stopped German officers from being hung for the crime that everyone knew the Soviets had done. The Black Book of Communism in the People's Republic of Poland expressly stated, the Black Book of Censorship, I should say, any attempt to burden the Soviet Union with the responsibility for the deaths of the Polish officers in Catan Forest is forbidden. And further evidence that everyone knew who was really responsible was even the most simple memorial erected in Poland with just a word like Catan was confiscated and the police destroyed any memorial set up around April for the Catan Forest Massacre. The Polish practice was to erect memorial crosses on All Saints Day, and these were always dismantled by the Soviet police. If Catan had really been a Nazi atrocity, it wouldn't have been a taboo subject in a communist-controlled country. And we can say that about all the things that we're forbidden to talk about today, too. Governments lie. Governments murder. Mass murder has been documented in death by government. The governments of the world are the champion, heavyweight champions of mass murder, just to use his words. So these were consistently, every single year, the Catan Forest Massacre memorials were shut down. But the British government also objected to plans to build a monument to the Polish prisoners murdered at Catan in the United Kingdom. So even in the United Kingdom, it was forbidden to put up a memorial in memory of these slain prisoners of war. And Britain has quite a large Polish population living there. In the 1960s, the Soviets launched a disinformation offensive to sidetrack the persistent accusations of Soviet atrocities and massacres throughout Eastern Europe. And so a village in Belarus, Katyn, spelled with a K-H-A-T-Y-N, which sounds similar to Katyn's K-A-T-Y-N, was chosen as a site for a memorial to commemorate the victims of, quote-unquote, Nazi atrocities. Apparently, 149 Katyn villagers had been massacred by Ukrainian and Belarus soldiers who were fighting on the side of the Germans in the Operation Barbarossa, March 1943. This Katyn K-H-A-T-Y-N memorial blames the Germans for the massacres, and this disinformation campaign scored a major success in 1974 when American President Richard Nixon was brought to Catan to lay a wreath at the memorial of these victims of the Nazis. And from this time, all Soviet publications displaced K-A-T-Y-N with K-H-A-T-Y-N, including in all the encyclopedias and historical dictionaries. And every Soviet leader had to deal with the persistent Polish charges of the Katyn Forest Massacre, and the Polish Solidarity Movement in the 1980s used underground printing presses to expose the Soviet duplicity and print the facts about the Katyn Forest Massacre, victims of communism. And so there were many of these atrocity testimonies that were printed. And interesting, during this very time of this kind of deception, Man of the Year of Time magazine was listed as Mikhail Gorbachev. And Gorbachev was continuing the deception. And we all know about this because Mikhail Gorbachev launched an historical commission in 1987 to create a new Soviet version of what actually happened at Katyn. And Gorbachev's Politburo proposed in 1988 to build a memorial to the, as they put, a memorial to the victims of the massacre executed by Hitlerites in Katyn, alongside a memorial to 500 Soviet prisoners of war allegedly also killed at Katyn, a myth created by the Badenko Commission with no evidence that it ever happened at all. And Gorbachev offered the Poles a simplified procedure for relatives who wanted to visit the graves where their loved ones lay buried at this new K-H-A-T-Y-N memorial site. However, the Polish historians tenaciously stood to their guns, exposed the Russian responsibility, the communist atrocities, and the Catholic Church in Poland labeled Katyn the worst crime in the history of mankind. And, well, one of the worst crimes in the history of mankind. I mean, I would say the worst crime committed in the history of mankind was the betrayal and crucifixion of our Lord Jesus Christ. But this is what the Catholic Church said. The Katyn massacre was one of the worst crimes in the history of mankind. And Gorbachev's trusted advisor, Valentin Falin, reported that Polish historians were subverting the Soviet Commission by producing their own evidence exposing the Badenko report of 1944 as spurious. So without waiting for the Soviet Commission's response, the Poles began publishing the facts, and the problem stubbornly refused to go away. Facts are very stubborn things. Even the communist puppet government of Jaruzelski was forced to admit that the liquidation of Polish officers was the responsibility of the Soviet Union. And, I mean, he was a puppet, but not even the Soviet's puppet in Poland could dare go against the facts that everyone knew. Facts are stubborn things. And truth does not fear investigation. So when you ban investigation, you know that you're hiding a lie. Only, on the symbolic date of the 13th of April, 1990, 47 years after Berlin Radio had announced the discovery of the massacre site, Gorbachev handed over two boxes of evidence to the Poles. And these documents made it clear that the Katyn massacre was the work of the head of the NKVD laboratory, Beria. And Gorbachev attempted to convince the Poles that more than 20,000 Polish nationals, it's more like 36,000, but just what they were admitting at that time, had been executed by the secret police chief without any authorization from the Soviet Politburo, which is, frankly, impossible in a totalitarian state. These limited confessions and further attempts at deception only enraged the Polish people further. And so an investigation conducted by the Prosecutor General's Office of the Soviet Union in 1991 and later by the Russian Federation confirmed Russian responsibility, Soviet responsibility for the massacres. However, the Russian Federation later tried to diminish the number of the deaths to 1,803 Polish citizens, quote unquote, and they refused to classify this action as a war crime or even as an act of genocide. They declared the investigation as closed on the grounds that the perpetrators of the massacre were already dead, not that they would even name who the perpetrators were. But in October 1992, after the fall of the Soviet Union, Boris Yeltsin, who had replaced Gorbachev, lowered the Soviet flag, abolished the Soviet Union, raised up the blue, red, and white flag of Russia, handed over the newly found secret documents from the Soviet Politburo to the Polish president, Lech Walesa. And the Politburo order, dated the 5th of March, 1940, was entitled Question of the NKVD. In it, Beria informed Stalin 14,736 Polish officers, intellectuals, police officials, gendarmes, and other intellectuals were being held in prison camps in occupied Polish territory, and 18,632 similar people were being held in camps in the western provinces of Ukraine and Belarus. So Beria requested permission to shoot them all. And Stalin's in favor, and his bold signature scrawled across the top of Beria's question, and that was one of the documents, the smoking gun, handed over to the Polish government. And five other Politburo members of the Soviet Union had also signed and approved this execution order. The document was labeled top secret, and of the total killed, about 8,000 were Polish military officers taken prisoner during the September 1939 Soviet invasion of Poland. Another 6,000 were police officers, and the rest were Polish intelligentsia arrested for being bourgeois. And the Katyn Forest massacre was justified by Stalin's Politburo's necessary to deprive a potential future Polish military of its leadership. And since Russia intended to keep the eastern portion of Poland as part of the Soviet Union, he was determined to provide it of a large proportion of its military and intellectual elite. Those who were murdered in the first batch alone included an admiral, two generals, 24 colonels, 79 lieutenant colonels, 258 majors, 654 captains, 17 naval captains, 3,420 non-commissioned officers, 7 chaplains, 20 university professors, 300 physicians, hundreds of lawyers, engineers, and teachers, more than 100 writers and journalists, and over 200 pilots. Altogether, during the massacres, the NKVD had murdered 14 Polish generals. Wasili Mikhailovich Blonkin, the chief executioner for the NKVD, is reported to have personally shot and killed 7,000 of the condemned Polish people in the Ostrakow camp over a period of 28 days in April 1940, making him the world's greatest serial killer. I mean, 7,000 people shot in 28 days by one person. Reportedly, his right hand hurt from all the recoil. You know, shame. Further documents revealed that every Soviet chairman since Joseph Stalin had signed out the Politburo's Katyn file, they're all well aware of the Russian complicity in the crime. A memo dated 20th of March 1959, for example, to Chairman Khrushchev, the Interior Minister Alexander Shlepin reported, the Committee of State Security has held, since 1940, case files and other material regarding prisoners and interned officers, policemen, gendarmes, military, settlers, landowners, etc., persons from former bourgeois Poland, who were shot in the same year. In all, on the basis of the decision of a special troika of the NKVD, the Soviet Union, 21,857 people were shot. The entire operation was carried out on the basis of a decision by the Central Committee, 5 March 1940. Since 1940, no information from these files was released to anyone. All of these files, numbering 21,857, have been stored in a sealed location. To Soviet organs, all of these files represent neither operational interest nor historic value. It is doubtful whether they could be of any real value to our Polish friends, meaning the Communist Party in Poland. Quite the contrary, any unforeseen incident may lead to revealing the operation with all the undesirable consequences to our state. This is especially because, regarding those shot in the Katyn Forest, there's an official version supported by an investigation carried out on the initiative of the Soviet state in 1944 by the Badenko Commission, which concluded that all these Poles liquidated were considered to have been killed by the German invaders. The conclusions of the commission became firmly established in international public opinion. It seems appropriate to destroy all the records regarding the person shot in 1940 in the above-mentioned operation. So Schlepin's recommendation to purge the records was carried out. Over 21,000 case files were destroyed. However, the Politburo's execution order and the memo from Beria remained in the official record. And these were later handed over to the Polish government by Boris Yeltsin of the Russian Federation. The files later released on Gorbachev's time include advice from advisors that should the truth of the Katyn Forest massacre ever come out, people could be convinced that the Soviet Union was no better than and may have been worse than Nazi Germany during the war, and the Soviet Union bears no less responsibility for the war, which is true. Polish historians point out that during the 1930s, hundreds of thousands of Poles living in western areas of the Soviet Union were marked out for persecution by Stalin, either execution or deportation to Central Asia. And the Soviet invasion in Poland, September 1939, was followed by waves of arrests, mass deportations to the east, And when the Katyn Forest massacre took place, hundreds of thousands of Poles, mainly the better educated and economically active citizens, were already exiled in Siberia, in the Arctic hellhole of these labor camps in Central Asia. They were herded there in horribly overcrowded freight trains, and at least one out of every five of them had died just during transportation to the Soviet concentration camps, died of disease or of starvation. Between 320,000 to possibly up to a million Polish citizens were deported to the Soviet Union, and of one group of 12,000 Poles incarcerated in Delstroy near Kolyma, which is a penal colony, in 1940, only 583 survived by 1942. Of the original 12,000, less than 583 had survived. Over 570,000 Polish citizens were arrested and incarcerated in concentration camps in the Soviet Union during the war, and the Polish prisoners were subjected to lengthy interrogations between October 1939 and February 1940. And these interviews were actually a selection process to determine who would live and who would die. And according to NKVD reports, if the prisoners could not be persuaded to adopt a pro-communist attitude, they were declared hardened, uncompromising enemies of the Soviet Union and condemned to be shot to death. So when Germany launched Operation Barbarossa in the summer of 1941, which was a preemptive strike as the Soviets were massing their forces on the border and they were about to invade Europe, which they assumed was very distracted and weakened by the wars that had been going on. And so they thought they could conquer Europe when the Germans preempted them with the Operation Barbarossa, which explains why so much of the Soviet air force and tanks were destroyed in the first few weeks, because they were all grouped at the border area, which the Germans overwhelmed. And it's only the massive resupply from Operation Lend-Lease, where Britain and America supplied vast amounts of bombers, fighters, planes, tanks, trucks, jeeps, weapons, ammunition, billions of rounds of ammunition, millions of shells, tens of millions of shells, you know, millions of uniforms, vast amounts of artillery and munitions, and only the resupply from Lend-Lease, from the Arsenal for Democracy, saved the Soviet Union from being crushed. But there's so many lies told about these things. So when the war was reaching its end and the Red Army was at the very gates of Warsaw, radio broadcasts from Russia urged the Polish citizens to rise up and revolt. And the Soviet army was then told, stand down, render no assistance to the Poles, as the Germans crushed the Warsaw uprising. And Stalin said, it's better that all resistance in Poland be crushed before we occupy. And so it was discovered also that when Germany launched Operation Barbarossa in 1941, the NKVD concentration camp guards were ordered to massacre all the thousands of Polish prisoners before fleeing eastwards to avoid the German advance discovering how many Poles had been relocated and imprisoned and brutalized. Well, when I visited Poland, Polish Christians reminded me, they were so impressed to see my South African flag. I had a little South African flag on my suit lapel pin. And they said only the South African Air Force had flown in weapons and aid to the Polish underground during the Warsaw Uprising. Now, I was surprised. I had read in history books that the Royal Air Force had done this, but that was another lie. It was actually the South African Air Force. But because of apartheid and South Africa no longer being popular, historians had expunged South Africa's role and replaced it with the RAF. Just like when you look at the history books and they tell you about the British liberating Addis Ababa of Abyssinia from the Italians, well, actually, that was done by the South African Springbok Legion. It was the South African infantry who liberated Addis Ababa, the capital of Abyssinia, during the war. But because South Africa was no longer popular because of its racial policies, therefore, that was expunged from the books and it was now just the British to liberate them, even though it was actually South Africans. Also intriguing is when the South Africans left Ethiopia, or Abyssinia, as it was then called, they first abolished slavery, because slavery was still legal in Abyssinia as late as 1941. Interesting and embarrassing to the narrative that it's the South Africans who actually abolished slavery in Abyssinia, one African country which had never been colonized. And that's intriguing. Well, the South African Air Force was given the thankless task of flying from Italy all the way across occupied Europe. And it was really a bit of a suicide mission. We lost a vast amount of the units that flew in the resupply and aid to the Polish underground in reaching Warsaw and then having to fly back over the same area on the way back. And the history books, that history books could just be rewritten to conform to politically correct dictates, is a very disturbing fact. But this is also what George Orwell spoke about in 1984. In his book 1984, which now seems to be treated like a manual by governments instead of a warning of what not to do, history is continually being rewritten by the Ministry of Truth, or Mini-Truth. And George Orwell knew this because he worked for the BBC, was a propagandist during the Second World War. And, you know, this is why also in 1984 you can see how your enemies of yesterday are suddenly your friends and allies of today. And to even remember that your present ally used to be an enemy is a treason, and you can become an unperson and disappear down the memory hole. So, you know, you can see where George Orwell got all this from. Well, a Polish citizen strenuously objected to any suggestion that they had been liberated by the Soviets. The Soviets never liberated anyone, they insisted. And the first act of the Soviets on occupying Poland was to arrest all leaders of the underground army and any government in exile people. So the Polish Christians pointed out most of the atrocities attributed to the German were actually communist atrocities committed by the Soviets and conveniently blamed on the enemies, who weren't allowed to defend themselves, of course. So Polish relatives of the victims continued to urge the European Court of Human Rights to rule on the crimes of the Stalin regime. And to Vladimir Putin's Russia, the Katyn Forest Massacre became an inconvenient truth which tainted Russian wartime heroism, quote unquote. So Putin's chief military prosecutor, Alexander Savinkov, issued a ruling on Katyn 11th of March 2005, in which he acknowledged that the NKVD Troika had found 14,542 Polish citizens held in NKVD concentration camps guilty of committing state crimes, and made a decision to shoot them in the spring of 1940. And Putin's representative claimed these Soviet officials abused their authority, but that no criminal case could be opened against them because the guilty parties had since died. The Polish claim of genocide was rejected, and although they agreed to hand over 67 of the 183 volumes of evidence, two-thirds of the remaining evidence was to remain classified in Russia. The Polish parliament was outraged and demanded that the Russian Katyn archives all be declassified and that the Russian courts rule that the Katyn Forest Massacre was an act of genocide. Well, communists throughout the world would prefer the truth of Katyn to be buried, but Christians in Poland and throughout Eastern Europe determined to exhume the secrets and to expose the true nature of communism. Human rights societies continued to pressure the Russian government until in November 2010, the Russian Duma, the Russian parliament, approved the declaration blaming Stalin and the Soviet officials for having personally ordered the massacre of Polish prisoners of war. This is only after the disastrous plane crash of Polish leaders en route to Katyn for the 70th anniversary commemoration. On the 10th of April 2010, an aircraft carrying the Polish president Lech Kaczynski and his wife and 87 other politicians and high-ranking army officers of Poland, it crashed near Smolensk, killing all 96 on board. And the passengers were to attend a ceremony marking the 70th anniversary of the Katyn Forest Massacre. And the Polish people were and are convinced that they were the victims of a communist terror campaign which assassinated their president and their senior leaders on the eve of the most important solemn anniversary of this massacre. And many observed this is so much like the assassination of General Sikorsky and his daughter in government on 4th of July 1943 at Gibraltar. In the furor following the death flight of the Polish government, the Russian Duma finally acknowledged Russia's guilt for the Katyn Forest Massacre. And so in 2011, the European Court of Human Rights declared admissible two complaints of relatives of the massacre victims against the Soviet Union concerning the inadequacy of the Russian investigations. In a ruling on 16 April 2012, the court found Russia had violated the human rights of the victims and the relatives, and they described the massacres as a war crime. It had taken 77 years, but facts are stubborn things. And to think of the amount of complicity and lies involved in covering up this atrocity, you wonder how many other atrocities and how many atrocities being done right now in Ukraine or in Russia by Ukrainian forces supported by the West are being buried and being conveniently blamed on the enemy, and how many years it'll take to dig out a lot of the atrocities done to us these days, such as by the COVID cult, lockdown lunacy, masquerade madness of 2020. And you just think of 2 Peter 2, verse 19. They promise them freedom while they themselves are slaves of depravity. They promise them liberty while they themselves are slaves of corruption. And you could write 2 Peter 2:19 over so much of what's done by governments in the world today. There's so much lying and deception. This took over 77 years to bring this lie into the light. And you wonder how many of our present lies are still being buried and what it's going to take to find out, for example, you know, the complicity of the American government in assassinating their own president, John F. Kennedy, back in 1963, just for example. And there's so many other atrocities which are in many ways still sealed. And you wonder, what other lies are we believing today that need to be exposed in the future? Back to you, Andrew.
Thank you, Peter.
Thank you, Peter.
Yes, it's astonishing to look at what has gone on over history, and that's a very important point. And it is interesting when you see these governments, we've sealed these records for 100 years and things like that, and they're allowed to do it. And it's basically because they know that they've done something wrong and they don't want to get prosecuted for it. So whenever you see things like this, you really have to raise questions over it. We've got a situation here in the UK where there was a massacre of children in a town called Dunblane in Scotland in, I believe, the late 1990s. And it was apparently by a lone nut, a guy called Thomas Hamilton, I believe. But for some reason, this lone nut who, you know, the records have been sealed for 100 years. So why the record sealed for 100 years for a lone nut? It's quite suspicious to me. That was something that Maleficus used to report on. He'd read a lot about that. But I'm just going to grab something here because I did actually cover in my book, The Synagogue of Satan, the plane crash that you referred to in 2010 on that 70th anniversary of the... trying to find it here, on the 70th anniversary of the Cat in Forest massacre. I'm just coming, here it is. This is what I wrote. On April the 10th, a plane crash occurred in Poland, wiping out their president, Lech Kaczynski, and his wife, many of their politicians and military officials, and the head of their central bank, Sławomir Skizpek. Interestingly, 12 days beforehand, Poland's central bank had issued the following statement in respect of loans from the IMF. The situation with the Polish economy and the financial system is sufficiently good that it is not necessary to ask the IMF for a further extension of the flexible credit line, and they went on to ridicule the IMF by stating they could actually afford to return their favour of indebtedness and usury by providing the IMF with a loan to help other countries overcome the effects of the global crisis. A little footnote I've got here is that on April 12th, 2 days after the plane crash, the Jerusalem Post reported that the chief rabbi of Poland, Michael Szydryk, was invited onto the flight but declined the invitation. Okay, so extensive study there, Peter, of the terrible events. So thank you for all the research you did in that for us. Anything else that you'd like to say? But please close out with where people can find your work and how they can contact you.
Thank you, Andrew. Yes, I've heard from friends of mine who work in the police and the military and military intelligence that they're convinced that most of these lone nut atrocities that led to increased restrictions on people to have firearms for self-defense were false flags done by the governments themselves, including not just the Dunblane massacre, but there's also Tasmania, the island off Australia. There's some lone nut who also did, just like Lee Harvey Oswald, some lone nut, no conspiracy. Conveniently, when the government wants to bring in further restrictions on freedoms of their families and freedoms, you get an atrocity, high profile, and the files have to be sealed for 100 years or so. Very suspicious. You know, how can you trust governments that have a track record of lying and false flags, that when they tell you for the public good or for the defense of the realm or whatever, they need to seal these records? Well, you know they are complicit if they've got to seal the records, because if the records vindicated the government and reinforced their story, they would want the records open. The only reason for governments to seal records is when it exposes things that they've done which are embarrassing, deceptive, atrocious, or criminal. And so really and truly, what you're seeing right now is an admission of guilt by governments when they have to seal and reseal and redact and cross out and delete and destroy so many records. And so I just wonder when the records of history are going to be rectified, because you can still find history books and, you know, based on a true story, Hollywood films, which are attributing to the Germans atrocities that we know were done by the Soviets. And there's so much of that. And in many cases, atrocities which were false flags, which were actually done by our governments. And these things just get brushed away. Who has ever made a Hollywood film on Operation Keelhaul? The atrocious portrayal of millions of Russians and East Europeans from East European countries, Ukrainians, who were forcibly repatriated to the Soviet Union against their wishes at the end of the Second World War, in accordance with the Yalta Agreement. I mean, here you had people literally getting beaten over the head by rifle butts, bayoneted by British and American troops, forced out, closing down celebrations of the Lord's Supper and the Mass, and Orthodox Christians and others trying to celebrate the Mass before losing their life, because most were shot out of hand when they were handed over to Soviet Union's NKVD. Mothers were so distraught that they even sometimes threw their babies into the icy Danube River as they were being forced by the Allied soldiers across into the hands of the terrifying mass-murdering thugs of the NKVD. And so we know this happened. It's been documented. It's a fact. Those files were sealed for 30 years, released in 1975. But Hollywood's never made a film on Operation Keelhaul and that treachery. You sort of wonder why they can make all kinds of fiction films, Sophie's Choice and so on. They can twist things, but they can't give the inconvenient facts. So I found one of the first books I ever read that opened my eyes to the other side was The Last Secret. And that was on the opening up of these files of 30 years later on the Operation Keelhaul betrayal of the Christians of Russia, the Cossacks and so on, who were, even if they weren't born in Russia, but their parents had fled from the Bolshevik Revolution, forced from Western Europe into the hands of the Soviets, most of whom were killed and the rest spent out the rest of their days in the Arctic hellholes of the Gulag. And then I read another book, also about 1975, and that was on Lusitania. When the Lusitania files were released, and they discovered actually the Lusitania was carrying vast amounts of munitions. It was smuggling weapons of war, artillery shells, and so on. And that's why the one unlucky torpedo struck the munitions in the hull of the Lusitania, and that's what caused the big explosions and made the ship sink so fast. It's one of the biggest ships in the world. And to see the complicity of the Royal Navy and the First Lord of the Admiralty, Winston Churchill, trying to provoke an incident, an atrocity in which many Americans would die, that would get America into the war on the British side, that they had specifically leaked this information to the Germans, that he even radioed through information from the Admiralty to redirect the Lusitania towards a wolf pack of submarines. And when they saw other Allied ships that could intercept too early and that might save some more, the people sent them orders to change their directions. The Lusitania files were quite shocking to realize the complicity of the First Lord Admiralty, Winston Churchill, in the Lusitania atrocity in order to provoke America into the war on the Allied side. And the cold-blooded lies, couldn't care less about civilian deaths and so on. Staggering. There's so many examples like this, but Catan is one of the best proven examples of lies of our governments to charge people who had nothing to do with the atrocity in order to cover up the atrocities of their allies. And again, My information is that this is being done today over the Ukraine war. There's a lot of atrocities being done, which are being covered up and just conveniently allocated to the enemy that you're not allowed to defend. And we've got to resist this. So I've written about my experiences in seeing all kinds of atrocities throughout Africa, and in my Frontline Behind Enemy Lines for Christ book, exposed being brought up in Rhodesia and going through the wars of Southwest Africa, Angola, Mozambique, eight wars, in fact, all the way through to Sudan, giving my insights, politically incorrect insights, which really go against the narrative and the lies that we've been given over the years by Hollywood and by our so-called history books. So if anyone wants to get hold of me, my personal email is peter@frontline.org.za, peter@frontline.org.za. Our website is www.frontlinemissionsa.org, Frontline Mission SA, short for South Africa, frontlinemissionsa.org is the website. You can find us on social media as well. Thank you so much, Andrew. Really appreciate this opportunity. And let's remember the people in Poland and keep praying for those who caught up in the horrible war of Ukraine right now.
Thank you so much, Peter. Fascinating research, as always. A very timely show. Okay, so that wraps us up for today. I want to thank all of you for joining us for Peter's presentation entitled The Real Story of the Katyn Forest Massacre and Why It Was Covered Up by Establishment Historians and Governments. Peter and I'll be back with you again next Tuesday. I'll be back with you on Saturday. And until then, folks, thank you for listening. Have a wonderful week, and bye for now.